Well, it's my privilege, friends, to come and lead you in worship today at the invitation of Pastor Wingard, and to return with you this morning to the book of Nehemiah, a book that I've known for many years in my own life. I was just thinking this morning when I first encountered it, it was through, and it's funny how these things happen, isn't it? My brother and sister grew up in the United States. My father and mother migrated to America in 1947. And they went to live in an area of New Jersey, just near New York. My mother took my sister to the local Presbyterian church there. And we still got some of the Sunday school material that my sister Elspeth learned in the United States about the Bible. And one of them was this little booklet entitled, And So the Wall Was Built. And it's about Nehemiah. And I was just thinking this morning, that was the first time when back in the 1960s, after they came back from America, I was born in Scotland, they came back just before I was born. That book's been in our family as a witness to the truthfulness of this very Bible book that we're looking at together today. Nehemiah, this wonderful book which contains so many spiritual lessons for us today as Christian believers. How we can build for Christ. And I hope that you want to be a builder for Christ, a constructive member of the Christian church, a person who through their prayers, interest and labour are seeking to advance the cause of Jesus in our own congregation and the regions beyond to the very ends of the earth. Last Sunday morning we had the opportunity just to consider the first chapter of Nehemiah, and I want to just bring this to you as way of introduction, where he saw that the cause of God in terms of the desolation that Jerusalem had suffered meant that God's work was at a very low ebb. And we thought in that Bible passage in the first chapter how he teaches us the way that we are to respond when we become aware of the low ebb of the cause of Jesus Christ in the world today. How it needs to be built up. That in the first instance, we are to pray. And remember, Nehemiah gave us a model prayer that we can follow in the second half of the first chapter, verses 4 through 10. And then in chapter 2, we noted three things last Sunday evening. And again, we do appreciate your patience in coming at 3 o'clock. We'll be here at 4 o'clock as normal this afternoon, God willing. How there was a delay, remember, between the end of chapter 1 and chapter 2, about 3 or 4 months, I think it is roughly, and how that delay often is the way of God for his people, to prepare them more for his service, perhaps, that they might also go to people who've been further prepared for God's service when they go. And then we read in the middle of chapter 2, in the first 10 verses, of that historical particular situation where Artaxerxes opened the door to Nehemiah's mission. Or should we say properly, that God opened Artaxerxes' heart to serve God by enabling Nehemiah, God's servant, to go to Jerusalem. It was remarkable, wasn't it? A sudden opportunity that Nehemiah grasped. And when the door opened, remember, he shot up the arrow prayer. And as the dialogue with with Artaxerxes unfolded, Nehemiah spoke those wonderful words about how the good hand of his God had been on him, ordering and shaping things. And then, before we come to the passage that we want to look at this morning, right at the end, under the providence of God, just as God was working through the delay, just as God was ordering Artaxerxes' heart to achieve his mission, suddenly the problems appear. And we're going to learn a bit more about them. And you might remember, if you were here last Sunday afternoon, I said, here's two names, if you've got twins, not to call your twins, Tobiah and Sanballat. We're going to see there's a third one emerges this morning. And we recognised, I hope, that even though the Lord's work is that to which we're called, it's often work that immediately faces opposition and difficulty. But the good news is it's all under the great hand of God, under his providence, his grace, his blessing, and his leading. And so that brings us directly to the passage in Nehemiah 2, verses 12 to 20. And Ben suggested that we could call this sermon series, he's good at doing this, Building for Christ, Nehemiah for Today's Christian. That's what I want to try and bring this message into our lives, from biblical redemptive history into our lives, from the Old Covenant into our service for Jesus Christ under the New Covenant, where the literalness of the building of the walls of Jerusalem stands for the advance of the Christian church in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the very ends of the earth. And I hope that as we give consideration to 12 through 20 of chapter 2 in three ways, we'll see how important it is for us as believers, this book, that we might be more faithful servants for Christ in 2024. Now, I want to begin the sermon proper now with a reminder of something that our Lord Jesus said. It's one of these things that Jesus said that we've got to have at the forefront of our minds. We need to have everything that Jesus says at the forefront of our minds in one sense, don't we? But there's some sayings that particularly are important if we want to be faithful and fruitful servants of Jesus. And here's one. Remember, in a famous interchange in Luke 18, they asked Jesus, given the deadness and coldness of the hearts of men and women and the opposition of the hearts of men and women and boys and girls to the cause of God, they asked Jesus, remember, in Luke 18, who then can be saved? And remember what Jesus said? The things which are impossible with men are possible with God. Now, it seems to me that that is the basic posture of the Christian in this world of sin. It's impossible, given the deadness and power of sin, for us to do anything in and of ourselves in becoming fruitful in the service of God. Until and unless God himself begins to work. And let's face it, Nehemiah was facing an impossible task. Oh yes, God had directed Artaxerxes' heart in such a way to open the door, to allow the work to go forward and progress. Yes, we've already seen a sign of God there. But nevertheless, it was a daunting task. And I think that most of us, in the deadness and the hard-heartedness of Australia in the 21st century, feel the same way, don't we? Debbie and Sharon were downtown yesterday and we were talking about it and there were some people putting on a performance and everybody was watching them. And yet there was a lady, I don't know whether any of us know this lady, probably you do know her, down there playing the guitar and singing a gospel song and no interest. And it struck me when you were saying that, Debbie, yesterday, that's our world, isn't it? They'll have everything but Jesus. Isn't it amazing? They'll have everything and anything but Jesus. And yet Jesus is everything and has everything for us. But unless the hand of God works, we will remain dead in our sins and trespasses and be entertained by everything and ignore always the gospel of Jesus. Entertained by everything but him, and ignore everything about him. But here's the good news, friends. While it's impossible for us to make any spiritual inroads, if God is with us, and he is by his promise, isn't he, in his spirit, then that which is impossible for us is possible with him. Now, I'm sure that you all know the movie series, and I forget how many parts we've got to now. You know the Mission Impossible movie series. I'm old enough to remember when it was on the TV. Anybody old enough to remember when Mission Impossible was on the TV? Remember, it's Mission-Impossible, question mark. That's the way it was originally. Well, we're going to look here today at a mission that is more than possible. And it's got nothing to do with Tom Cruise, I'm glad to say. If you know who Tom Cruise is. Here we see, in the book of Nehemiah illustrated for us, gospel ministry. which is impossible for us to do in and of ourselves, but is possible when the good hand of God is upon us. And every Christian man and woman and boy and girl here today know that's true. We know that's true. We know we are unprofitable and unfruitful servants, but God, when he uses us, can make us powerful in his service and bring his gospel to people in amazing and unexpected ways. And I want to try and bring to you around this theme, mission more than possible, three great ideas as we look at the passage and see how in the historical particular context of Nehemiah, some great timeless gospel principles are illustrated. Let's look at the verses 11 through 16 first of all. And here I'm inviting you, and this might sound very strange, to use demographics in making mission more possible. I'll explain what demographics are in a moment. But I hope you can see when you read verses 11 through 16, that's what's happening here. So I came to Jerusalem. Remember, those are the famous words that are often used on the front pages of commentaries on Nehemiah. And was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem because of the opposition, we believe, nor was there any animal with me except the one which I rose. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well and the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates which were burned with fire. Then I went to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal under me to pass. That's because of all the rubble and rubbish. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. He was keeping it secret at this point because of the opposition. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. Now, what's he doing here? Well, he's familiarizing himself with the circumstances of Jerusalem directly and firsthand. That's what he's doing, isn't he? He's doing a survey. He's checking it out. He's seeing if the report that he'd received back in the capital of Artaxerxes had understated things or overstated things, so he could calibrate the response in the right way, so he could marshal his efforts and his forces in the right way, so he could deploy workers in an effective and fruitful way. And I don't think it's too much of a jump to say that what he's doing here is he's doing a kind of demographic survey. Now, some of you might know, we've got one of Australia's leading demographers lives in WA, Bernard Salt. If you read the Australian newspaper, Bernard Salt is the resident demographer. And that means he analyses data, trends and circumstances to interpret them and understand them. He's very interesting. He's like a social commentator. One of the most interesting ones recently was he was talking about how the fallout of COVID has continued to the renewal and refreshment of regional and rural Australia. There's lots of people moving out of the capital cities and finding new life and new hope in regional and rural Australia. Maybe I'm one of those people, I don't know. But Bernard Salt studies the days, trends and times, the circumstances and events, to try and understand what's going on so that we might know the way forward in a social demographic way. Now, Nehemiah's doing that kind of, isn't he? But he's doing it for a spiritual reason. He's doing it so that he doesn't misfire in his response. And so he might hit the target at the centre when he begins to do his work. And it does seem to me, that this is an important pre-step before gospel ministry. Now you might be thinking, this guy's gone crazy. Why is he talking about demographics? Did you know that in Christian history, demographic studies have played a major role in the evangelization of the world? Did you know that? Let me mention the first, perhaps, and greatest demographic study of the worldwide state of the church that launched a day and time of missions that continues to reverberate to the glory of Jesus Christ and the furtherance of the gospel to this day. It was written by a man called William Carey. And he lived in the town of Kettering. Now, those of you who know Paul Bloomfield will know that he was born in Kettering in central England. Now, who's William Carey? Well, William Carey was a sort of part-time preacher, if you will. He wasn't a cobbler, he said. He wasn't qualified enough today. He was a shoemaker. But he was also a passionate Christian. He was a Baptist minister. And he was very concerned at the spirit of apathy that lay over Christianity in England in the era and time of when English people were becoming aware of the world around them. Now, here's a question for Albanians. Who knows what year Vancouver came to Albany? Anybody know? 1791, if you don't know the answer. Now, the next year, 1792, William Carey joined together with a small group of ministers in Leicester. He came from Kettering. Leicester's nearby. And he'd spent his time, and remember in this period of English history, this is the period of Captain Cook. This is the period of the Royal Navy rising to enormous significance in terms of maritime exploration of the world. This is the time when the vista of European people was being stretched worldwide. And because he was a Christian, because he was a minister, William Carey took a great interest in the world demographically. And he wrote this famous book. Now I want to give you the full title, because it's a beautiful title. He compiled a book. He wasn't a professional demographer like Bernard Saw. He was just a minister. A shoemaker, not even a cobbler, he said. He wrote this famous book, An Inquiry into the Obligation of Christians to Use Means for the Conversion of the Heathens, in which the religious state of the different nations of the world, the success of former undertakings, and the practicability of further undertakings are considered. Now, if you know the modern Christian book Operation World by Patrick Johnson, that is a direct descendant of Carey's famous inquiry. And in it, he expanded Matthew 28. He reviewed Paul's missionary journeys. He analysed the religious state of the world, and he called for a new day of the use of means in gospel proclamation. And what we call the worldwide missionary movement, particularly in the 19th century, remember 1792 is the 18th century, in the next century, is really birthed by this guy in this hick town, in this tiny little group. You know, when Carey first brought his inquiry before the group of people he was with, we've actually probably got three times more the number of people who he originally spoke to. And after he made this passionate statement using this little book, and you can get it on the internet, just Google Carey's inquiry and you'll go straight to the websites. After he made this impassioned plea, he got zero response. And one of the guys who was there was the great minister, Andrew Fuller, who some of you will know of, a great minister of the Word of God, from Kettering itself. And Carey pulled on Fuller's arm, his jacket, and said, "Is there still nothing that we will do?" And of course, some of you know the story of Carey. What happens is he decides that he's going to have to go. If nobody else is going to go, he's going to go, and he goes to India and lays gospel foundations there that reverberate to this day. He also went to Burma. I've been to Myanmar, to Burma, and he set and trained a gospel movement there that's still alive in Burma today, in Myanmar, in that ultra-left-wing socialist country. Now, what's the point of all this? Well, Carey analysed and then he began to act. Nehemiah is analysing and he's about to act. But he needs to know the circumstances he's facing so that he will know the situation that he needs to respond to. Now, that's what we need to do, friends. And I think, in God's amazing providence, I wasn't expecting to travel 4,322 kilometres in the second week as superintendent of the PIM, but I got a real vision for what we need to do in all that. There's lots of places, not in the world beyond Australia, but in Australia, where there is a great need for gospel ministry. And the more that we become aware, the more responsible we are to do something about it. What are we going to do about it? As we become aware of the many towns and country areas and outback areas where there's no gospel ministry. If I can speak of my own ministry in PIM, what are we going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? I want to ask you what you'll do about it, but what am I going to do about it? That's what Carey did with Fuller. He said, "Mr. Fuller, are we still not going to do anything?" And so he went off and became a missionary. What are we going to do about it? It's worth pondering, isn't it? Look what happens next. Mission more than possible. See how? By teamwork. Look at verse 17 to verse 18. "Then I said to them, 'You see the distress that we are in,'" through the demographic survey in their own eyes, right? "'How Jerusalem lies waste. They're perishing out there without Christ and without the gospel. How can we sit here at ease in Zion? And its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach.' And I told them of the hand of my God which had been good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken to me. And so they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' Then they set their hands to this good work." This is a great passage, isn't it? You know, 33 years in parish ministry, hundreds of sermons, thousands of sermons, and sometimes zero response. Isn't it nice when the preacher gets a response? That's what's happening here. They're responding, isn't it? Isn't it wonderful when God begins to stir his people? And when they say in the understanding of the challenges before them, "Come, let us build the walls of Jerusalem." Isn't that a wonderful thing here? And of course, what's happening is that the team that God is bringing together begins to emerge under true biblical leadership. That's always the way. That's why churches which have been dead and moribund, when a new leader comes or a group of leaders come, suddenly under the hand of God begin to stir and rise. That's what's happening here. Biblical leadership is being brought to bear. Anointed by the Spirit, informed by the context, and driven by the promises of God. And here, they begin to come together in teamwork to build the church and the cause of God. Now, it's important to remember William Carey's title in this regard. Because didn't we just say it's impossible with man but possible with God? Yes, but how? Listen to Carey, who was a Reformed Baptist Christian minister, remember? William Fuller was too. Listen to his title, An Inquiry into the Obligations of Christians to Use Means for the Conversion of the Heathens. Now, what are the means? Well, that's us, isn't it? That's us hearing the word, responding to the word, going with the word for the glory of the word. And here, putting the shoulder to the wheel. Getting going in the work. It's a complete misunderstanding, you know, to think that in ordinary ways, God works without means. Now, we know he can, and we know that he does sometimes, but ordinarily, God has chosen to use us, his people, to bring his word and his gospel to the world. Do you know that? That's true, isn't it? We are the team who are expected to go as the Spirit leads us and as the Word reveals the way forward to us to bring the good news of Jesus to the world around about us. And a true Christian leader, someone has said, must encourage trust in God by leading in faith as well as in action. Look at Nehemiah, he's encouraging him, he's telling him, well, God did this for me, what will he do for us? He's rejoicing that he has seen God's hand working, and now he's encouraging them to get on board with the gospel team. A long time ago, I went to Sydney, and it's a huge city, old Sydney, isn't it? Personally, I can't wait to get out of the place. But anyway, the harbour's nice, the bridge is nice, but the rest of it's just a huge suburban wasteland, Sydney, isn't it? I went to a church in Riverwood, I think it was in Sydney, and the minister was a very nice fellow. And the only thing I really remember about this church was, you know, the Sydney people, they've got all these mottos, you know, the SNBC, Moore College influence, they've got all these gospel mottos. And the motto of this church, you know, it was a good motto, was this. I think it was Rivervale Presbyterian, Riverwood Presbyterian Church. Building a team for Jesus. I thought, that's a great motto, isn't it? Now, it's not everything that a church is about, but it's something that the church is about. And it seems to me it's here in this kind of passage, this is exactly what Nehemiah is doing. He's building in New Covenant terms a team for Jesus. And isn't that what we're trying to do here in Albany Presbyterian Church? Aren't we trying to build a team for Jesus so we can go with the gospel? Worth thinking about, isn't it? And I think there's four things that we can reflect on here before we finish in a moment with the last couple of verses. The work that is being described here is our work, friends. We've got to think about it in terms of what we are doing. What are you doing? Easy to leave it to other people, but what are we doing? What are you doing? It's our work, this. We're Christians. We've been baptized and therefore commissioned for Jesus' service all our days. It's our work, building the wall in old covenant terms. Can I say to you, secondly, it's often going to be difficult work. Let's not sugarcoat in a world of sin how hard it is to be Christ's people. It's difficult. It's going to be difficult for them. It's going to be difficult for you. But get on board, Christian. It's the only life worth living. Thirdly, we must do this work. You know, Jesus said, the hour is coming when no person can work. Life will be passed quicker than we think. I can't believe I've made it to 64. Seems like it's a flash. Where did all those years go? What are we doing now? We must do this work while we've got time. For the night's coming when no one can work. And fourthly and finally, let me encourage you, with Christ, his promises, and his Spirit, we can do it. We can do it. With Christ, his promises, and his Spirit, all of us and all of the Lord's people can do the work that he calls us to. Mission is more than possible when we're doing it together as a team for Jesus. But let's finish now with the third thought, exactly where we ended on Sunday evening. Because here we read of more problems. Wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have these verses? Look at verse 19. But when, who? Good old Sanballat and good old Tobiah. And now there's a third one, Geshem. Heard of it. That's the gospel work. They laughed at us and said, and despised us and said, what is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against the king? So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we are his servants. We will rise and build, but you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem. You see what's happening here? As the call is coming more clearly and as the team is being assembled more fully, as the work is coming over the horizon to begin its execution, there's more opposition arises. Ever notice that in the Christian life and Christian ministry? More opposition. And you know, there's another saying of Jesus I want to mention as we conclude now. It's not from Luke 18. That's the one. Things that are impossible with men are possible with God. It's from Matthew 10. And I know that Reverend Wingard's preached on Matthew's gospel recently, and he might have preached a sermon on this great one. This one. Listen to this one. This is a missionary commissioning word from Jesus. I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. That's a mission motto, isn't it? That's the world that Nehemiah is in. A sheep amongst wolves. And if you had triplets, here's three names to avoid. You know, you had twins, you'd avoid Sanballat and Tobiah. If you had triplets, you'd avoid Geshem as the third name for the son, wouldn't you? These are the enemies of the gospel of Jesus. This is the seed of the serpent rising to strike again the seed of the woman. And I hope you know the allusion I'm making to Genesis 3 at this point. As the work begins, the opponents multiply. And as the opponents multiply, their verbal intimidation and attacks on God's people increase. Sound familiar? In the church today, we're being verbally attacked and maligned on every hand today. To such an extent that for many, the voice of truth has almost fallen silent through fear. Because of the verbal attacks, the mockery and the negativity. I mean, I can't think of another example of this in one way, but poor old Philip Adams, who many of us know on Radio National and then The Australian, of course, who's a great cynic and a great atheist, sadly the son of a minister we know, takes every opportunity to pillory and attack and slander Christianity. Now, sometimes he's got good cause for it. But a lot of time is an ideological bent that he's articulating. And he's not alone today, friends. We're surrounded with this stuff. We're surrounded by wolves and we're like sheep. How are we to respond? Well, faith must remain strong by grace. And work must remain continual by grace. And we need to learn to be shrewd, to have our minds turned on and to be of such character that our moral and spiritual purity does not allow any ground upon which the gospel to be maligned or attacked. That's what Nehemiah is doing here in expressing such confidence in God and his word. We're going to do it no matter what you say. And we're going to achieve it, not because of who we are, but because of who God, his promises, and his gospel is and are. Mission is more than possible despite opposition. When faith remains strong by grace, not from ourselves, but by grace, and where works remain continual by grace. I've been to lots of funerals, many Christian ones, and I'm often surprised, you know, when they have that thing they call the eulogy, where people are praised up, even Christians, without the mention of God's grace. Ever experienced that in a Christian funeral? It's like Western civilization has come to an end because the beloved person has passed from this world. But they and we are only what we are by grace. Remember, Paul said it so famously, and we Australians remember it so marvellously through Albert Namatjira. Remember the indigenous painter? On his tomb out there in Alice Springs, some of you might have seen it, it says, on his tombstone, by the grace of God, I am what I am. And here, when Nehemiah faces the opposition, he's not doing it in his own strength. It's not like Nehemiah is Superman or Mr. Wonder Man. He's a human being with God's grace. And because of God's grace, he's able to remain strong and continue the work no matter what happens. So let's have no more of this praising people in and of themselves. If they're eminent servants of the Lord, let's recognize that they're eminent servants of the Lord by grace alone, through faith alone in Christ Jesus. And despite the opposition that we face, by teamwork, as we have analysed demographically the task before us, we will be able to build for Christ and learn the lessons as today's Christians that God would have us from Nehemiah. May he lead us and help us and incline our hearts towards the knowing and doing of his will, to the glory of his name, both now and forevermore.